My name's Jo Evans. I'm from Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet in Canberra. Unique opportunity to ask you a direct question, Dr. Shapiro. So if I may, you made a point about the possibility of using taxes, revenues raised from such a tax to replace other taxes. I'd just like you to elaborate on that because, to my mind, the intent of these systems is to transform economies. And so you can't really use these as an ongoing tax base into the future because that implies you expect us to continue having significant carbon emissions from which to raise tax revenue. So I'm wondering if you could just elaborate a little bit on your idea of trying to use it as an alternative tax base.
Yes, certainly. In the very long term, looking ahead 20, 30 years, the tax base for a carbon tax would certainly contract. Frankly, we have particularly countries like the United States and Australia, which are very energy intensive, more energy intensive than Europe or Japan. The tax base is going to remain in place for quite some time. The point of the tax shift really comes from a basic insight in political economy, and that is, it is, in the absence of war, has proved virtually impossible to get democratic societies to accept short-term costs in order to avoid larger long-term costs. It's hard enough to get people to accept short-term costs in order to achieve long-term benefits. That would be the payroll taxes people pay for their state pension. But there are virtually no cases in which people have been willing to pay short-term costs simply in order to avoid a larger long-term cost. Most people's view and most politicians' view is, we'll worry about the long-term costs when the long-term costs are here. Climate change offers a challenge to that dynamic because once the long-term costs are here, they can't be reversed, and they are potentially devastating. But they're still so far off, that is 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years off, that it's very, very difficult politically to persuade people to bear a significant short-term cost. That helps explain how cap and trade has been working. Cap and trade works by virtually eliminating the short-term costs through the gaming and the exemptions. The problem with that is that it doesn't achieve any progress on climate change. The notion of a tax shift is to respond to this problem by saying, what we're going to do is change relative prices. We are going to create new incentives, price incentives, for people to be more energy efficient and for corporations and governments to develop alternative fuels by raising the price of carbon in fuels. However, at the same time, we're going to reduce the overall cost to the individual by reducing other taxes. Now, the price signal from the carbon tax for energy will remain in place under a tax shift, but the overall personal cost would be significantly reduced by a tax shift, which we think would enable it to actually be adopted. As I said, the alternative appears to have been, from the point of view of this insight in political economy, cap and trade regimes that impose almost no cost and produce almost no benefit.
Peter Duncan, Dr. Shapiro, I thought you put a most convincing case for the carbon taxes. However, and you touched on this yourself, do you not think that rolling back the momentum that now exists in favor of cap and trade risks actually destroying the momentum towards taking steps in respect of greenhouse? And secondly, don't you think that some of the disadvantages, volatility was one which you mentioned, are in fact no different in kind from the problems that we have in other forms of traded goods, which the markets have shown themselves capable of dealing with?
Yes and no. That's what economists always say, I suppose. First of all, I believe that there is a growing public consensus, certainly in the United States, I see it, to take serious action on climate change that was not there 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. When Kyoto was being negotiated, there was a consensus among experts. There was no public consensus at all to support it. And that consensus has grown in the United, certainly in the United States. And a lot of the credit goes to former Vice President Gore through his effective public education on the risks of climate change. I think that if there were effective leadership that said, that could say to the publics in countries, yes, we are committed to addressing climate change, and we think this is a better course, and this is how it would work, I think the momentum would not be eroded. But one never knows. It's a test of leadership. What we do know is that cap and trade achieved its success only, but at the cost of having any real effect on climate change. If you're really serious about climate change, either the cap and trade regime has to be resold in terms of what the actual cost would be, or you need to move to a different model. On the other question about the volatility, it's not really the same because demand goes up for a product, but when it does, you can produce more of it, and that limits the volatility. Businesses respond to rising demand with rising production to meet that demand. That's what competition does. A cap and trade regime assumes that you're not going to respond that way, that the cap stays in place. Consequently, the volatility, there's no safety valve for the volatility.
Ralph Evans, I'd just like to clarify something. Are you telling us there should be a single global rate of tax for carbon? If so, who will set it? And can you give us an inkling of how much it will be?
Let me say that that's the ideal, would be a global harmonized net carbon tax rate. But the truth of the matter is that a significant increase in carbon-based taxes by all major producers and consumers of countries of fossil fuels would get us a long way to where we want to go, I believe. You know, I've been in economic policy, dealing with economic policy for many years, and my goal is never to produce the ideal outcome because I know that's way beyond anyone's ability. There are too many actors in the politics of modern countries, too many forces, the results are always compromises. My goal is that after a policy is put in place, the consequences are moving in the right direction. And that's my goal for making the case that carbon taxes would be the most effective way to achieve progress on climate change. I honestly believe that ultimately we are going to deal effectively with climate change through the development of new technologies and new modes of behavior, but that we can't get to those without changing the price signals. We have the technologies and behavior that are consistent today that are consistent with our current price signals, and it is endangering the global environment. So we need to change those signals in order to get people to change and corporations to change and to develop new technologies and alternative fuels. And that ultimately will be the way we will address climate change. The cap and trade or carbon taxes are a way to get to the answer on climate change, not a way to actually solve the problem. No one thinks that a cap alone, if it didn't create incentives to develop new technologies would be an effective way to address climate change. So these are both transitional policies. In order to get billions of people to change the way they conduct their lives, that's a very large order, because we have complex societies and complex economies that are organized around massive consumption of fossil fuels that are now endangering the global environment. With respect to the level, I have to tell you that that's a scientific question, and it looks now like the scientific consensus at this moment is a tax that would be the equivalent of $40 to $50 per ton of carbon. And that's a substantial tax, but only a substantial tax will create substantial changes in behavior and development. As I said, we can offset it, that cost for individual families, with tax shifts, and still keep in place the sharp change in relative prices that creates strong incentives to move to energy-efficient technologies, much more energy-efficient ways of constructing buildings and homes, much more energy-efficient transportation. Let me also say, since I have you, the audience here, neither carbon taxes nor cap and trade is the single answer. We need more support, public support, government support for basic research in a lot of these technological areas. And nanotechnology, for example, is focused very significantly on energy issues. We need more government support for that. We need better signaling behavior by government. You know, the United States government and the Australian government and the governments of Europe, they are the largest single customers in all of their societies. They build enormous numbers of buildings, they purchase enormous numbers of cars and trucks, and enormous numbers of appliances of various kinds, heating systems, cooling systems. They ought to set in place, every government should be green, and all of their purchases should be green, not only because they're such large customers that it will create enormous incentives for businesses to satisfy a green demand, a green-based demand, but also because it's a way that governments signal to their people the kind of behavior that their people ought to follow. So I think those steps can be very are very important as well.
Hi, Kath Rowland from the Australian Treasury. I was interested in your comments on the political economy issues around trading and taxes. One of the issues that's raised in the Australian debate as a merit of the trading scheme is that if you create a futures market in permits, then you essentially create a political constituency for higher prices in the future, which means strong caps, which means potential for deep cuts in emissions over the long term. I'm interested in your views on the equivalent political constituency within a tax regime, because if you need deep cuts and if that implies a rising price curve over time, who's going to be lobbying for rising taxes?
Well, let me say two things. One is, you point out the largest single constituency for cap and trade, certainly in the United States, and that's Wall Street. They see tens of billions of new financial assets that can be traded, on which they will earn commissions on both sides of the trade, and will be able to bet one way or another, and they usually bet correctly. They're such big players that their bets often are self-fulfilling. Let me also say that we have in the United States numerous examples of the manipulation of natural gas futures, for example. And these markets will be subject to manipulation. It's the nature of futures, most futures markets. You can be vigilant and stop it and punish the people, but that is a problem. The constituency, there is no constituency for higher taxes, But there is a constituency for lower taxes. And higher carbon taxes in a tax shift mean lower taxes in some other area, if that's the way you're operating. Within a tax shift program, there would potentially be quite a broad constituency for a higher carbon tax that would produce a deeper cut in payroll taxes or corporate taxes or whatever tax was going to be cut to offset the cost.